Hey there, and thanks for venturing beyond the Rotunda, your Farmingdale Public Library podcast, where we often talk about literature, history, and community, but sometimes we'll answer questions like, what creative skills do you use to express yourself? I am your narrator, Kevin Schultz. Let's get well-versed in verse. This is episode 9 of the Beyond the Rotunda podcast, a production of the Farmingdale Public Library, where we are more than just books. And I want to welcome all. Welcome to our April episode. April is known for many things, including rain, the first full month of spring. Of course, there's rain, the first full month of the baseball season. And let's not forget rain. But April is also known as Poetry Month. Now, there may be some different events in your area that you can take part in. Readings, workshops, open mic nights, things like that. Go check them out and have some fun. Because it is Poetry Month, I conducted an interview with arguably Long Island's most celebrated poet, J.R. Turek. T-U-R-E-K. We discussed her love of poetry and writing in general, her many years of writing at least one poem per day, and she read some of her poems from her vast collection. But before we get to that, let's check out our cover question. What creative skills do you use to express yourself? Now, I have always considered myself a creative type. I love it when I get the opportunity to express my creative side. For example, I love to dance. I am so looking forward to my stepdaughter's wedding, which is coming up in a few months. Of course, I want to celebrate her special day with her, but I also want to get on that dance floor and shake my groove thing. I love to sing when no one is listening. I recently created a playlist for my 50th birthday. I took all my favorite songs from those 50 years and put them together. It was well over 500 songs, and it takes over 26 hours to listen to it. I also enjoy creating games for my family to play during our family gatherings. Scavenger hunts, trivia games, things of that nature. But most of all, I am a writer. I have been honing my craft for 40 years now. I've been working on a couple of novels over those years, but I have really settled in to writing short stories, where I take an actual event from my life and build a story around it. And I will be published someday. That is a promise that I have made to myself and to anyone else who cares. So those are some of the creative things that are in my book. Let's find out some of the ones that are in yours. Jennifer from Farmingdale said, I consider myself a creative. I enjoy expressing myself in many ways. On a daily basis, I tend to my vegetable and flower gardens. I also sew, crochet, and paint, which serve both professional and practical purposes. I have been fortunate to have sold many of my artwork and crochet projects. The walls in my home are adorned with several of my paintings. While my family and I wear many of my crochet sweaters and other items. I even crocheted my own wedding dress. The satisfaction I get after completing a project is fulfilling. Jennifer, wow, that's some impressive stuff. You should be proud of all that talent. I am sure you looked beautiful in your wedding dress. We have Liz from Port Washington who wrote in and said, I have no significant creative skills, with the exception of gardening. I'm a bit obsessed. I tend to my garden all the time. I have hydrangea bushes all around, and I plant perennials and annuals to add some color. It's a great physical outlet as well. Ripping out weeds, moving plants around, bending and squatting. Then, when I'm all done, I look around, I see how beautiful it all is, and I smile. Liz, gardening is one of life's most natural workouts, and I am so glad to hear that you are helping to the beautification of the world. Keep it up. Now, we didn't get many responses to this one. I feel like many people don't realize the creative skills that they actually do have. I encourage everyone to keep searching and recognize them. They are there. You have them. I do thank those who did respond. Next month's cover question is, what song or band, upon hearing, immediately takes you back to your youth? As always, you can email me at beyondtherotunda@farmingdalelibrary.org or reach out on Facebook and Instagram by searching Kevin Schultz BTR. Now, let's turn the page to my interview with J.R. Turek, the superintendent of poetry of the Long Island Fair. What does that mean? Let's find out. We are here with J.R. Turek, one of Long Island's most celebrated poets, a 2017 New York State Woman of Distinction, the 2019 Walt Whitman Birthplace Long Island Poet of the Year, a 2020 Hometown Hero from the East Meadow Herald, the Superintendent of Poetry for the Long Island Fair, recipient of the Conklin Prize in Poetry, moderator of the Farmingdale Creative Writing Group for nearly 30 years, and she is well into her 21st year of writing at least one poem per day, which is amazing, and I need to take a breath. J.R. Turek, the Purple Poet, thank you for venturing beyond the rotunda.
Thank you so much for having me as a guest. I'm delighted.
My pleasure. My listeners know that I always start off by giving my guests the opportunity to answer our cover question. This month's cover question is, what creative skills do you use to express yourself? Now, we've already established your skills for poetry and writing in general. So, and we're going to talk about that going forward. So my specific question for you is, do you express yourself in any other creative ways?
Yes. I crochet. I make cardigans, and I need a bigger closet. I do a lot of crocheting. It's kind of therapy. I make jewelry. I will bling anything and everything. I do a little painting. Yeah, a lot of creative stuff. A lot of creative things.
Very nice. My wife also crochets. We have blankets, we have rugs, we have sweaters all over the place.
Yes, it is. I do it so I don't unravel.
Very good. So now let's get back. Let's get into it. Are you a born and raised Long Islander?
Yes, I am. I grew up in Westbury, went through Coplay School District, and got married at 22 and moved one whole town over to East Meadow. So I'm the West East gal.
Now, earlier, I went through a litany of your awards, accommodations, accomplishments that you have earned. Can you say which one has evoked the most pride or satisfaction?
Absolutely. Being the 2019 Walt Whitman Birthplace Poet of the Year was outstanding. Just an amazing, amazing award for the island. I mean, to thank for Long Island. It was a standing room only reception. I really was over the moon. And it was a wonderful year to be the Poet of the Year because it was Whitman's 200th birthday. So we had celebrations all over Long Island. And so it was an honor. I just was just proud beyond words. And so I hold that in very, very high esteem. I do.
Oh, that's great. Well, congratulations for that.
Thank you.
What stood out to me in your accomplishments is the superintendent of poetry for the Long Island Fair. Can you explain what that entails?
Oh, yes, I can. I love the title. I didn't create it. Superintendent of Poetry. Oh my.
Yes.
So the Long Island Fair, huge, huge, huge county fair, had poetry for years and years and years. As a matter of fact, I won a ribbon one year. It was very exciting.
Nice.
Very, very exciting. And then they stopped. And we made phone calls and we sent emails. And the next year, still no poetry. And we made phone calls and we sent emails and we were very frustrated. And I picked up the phone. And lo and behold, I get on the phone the head honcho who runs the whole fair, who basically said, well, you know, we like to support the arts and we love having poetry. But, you know, if someone doesn't step up and take control of the poetry competition, we can't do that. And so if you're willing to do that, and I said, absolutely. And he was a little stunned. I showed up, we had a meeting and I showed up with a 13-page resume. And he said to me, what is this? I said, this is my CV. He says, I don't need that. You have the job. And so from then on, I am the superintendent of poetry for the Long Island Fair, which is just it's a very exciting thing to have poetry hanging in a barn next to photographs and paintings and collages and baked goods, you know, mm-hmm. and there's, you know, the giant pumpkin is outside and there's bunnies and rabbits and goats and all sorts of things and poetry. And so that to me, just, it's very exciting. It's free for people to enter. They give ribbons and now they're giving money, which is, over the moon.
You
know,
there you go.
First prize, you get $3. Second, you get two. And first prize, you get $1. But you know what? They're supporting poetry. And that means so much to me as their superintendent of poetry.
Right.
So I'm very proud of, that. I am, my little forwardness created another poetry event for us. Exciting.
That sounds great. Yeah. And when is the fair?
It's generally the second week of September. It runs from Friday through Sunday. There's events every hour of every day in several different places throughout the fairgrounds. It's an exciting thing. It really is an exciting thing. I have a great group of judges. We get together, we read through the poems. We have children, young adults, and little kids too. So it's for everyone. Very exciting. I sound like a commercial, I know, but
no,
I love the fair.
Nothing wrong with promotion.
Love the fair.
And everyone should, all my listeners should go check it out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Free to enter, folks. And you could win
$3.
And a ribbon. And the ribbon, most people say the ribbon's more important than the money, but the money's okay too.
And they'll get to meet you as well.
That's true too.
There you go. Now, you participate in many forms of creative writing. Predominantly, you land in the poetry genre. First, when did you realize that you had the desire and the skills to write? And then what drew you to poetry?
I wrote my first poem at 5. I didn't really have aspirations to be a famous poet. When I was 5, I wanted to be the first women's billiard champion. And so at 5, I was writing poetry and I was also standing on a desk chair, raking, you know, a round of 8-ball for my father and my grandfather, and then waiting to break again. That was all I could do. So it was never that aspiration. It's just a natural thing. I have been writing all my life and I can't imagine not writing. I know when I start to get really stressed and emotionally overwhelmed, I need to write. People in my life will say to me, I think you need to write, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just always been a really big part of my life.
That's amazing. Do you still have that first poem?
It's in my head. I was
Okay.
five and I do not recite it. It's
Fair
one of
enough.
those cringe-worthy things, but I do remember.
Fair enough. Where do you get your poetic inspirations from?
I open my eyes, I close my eyes. Inspiration is everywhere. I have a collection of poems dedicated to dust. Okay, so it's everywhere. Inspirations are there. People say, "Oh, I wait to be inspired." And it's like, well, 24/7. I mean, you could be inspired in your sleep and, and write from your dreams even. And so it's there. It's kind of like opening up the doors and the windows in your brain to allow them in, and then it's up to you whether you sit down and work with them or you don't.
Right. Do you feel it instantly?
Most of the time, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's, you're a poet. If you don't have a small pad of paper and a pen in your pocket, you cannot have a good memory. There's no way you're going to remember all of them, but
Right.
you have to capture them and jot down the essence immediately, or it's like a feather on your head. The minute you move, it's gone. And so I capture as many as I can every day.
That's great. Do you have any writing influences?
I am very, very inspired by peer poets. We have a huge, huge, huge poetry community on Long Island here. And now, the silver lining from the pandemic, we have a world full of poets, available, via Zoom.
Right.
And so I'm very inspired by other poets reading, featuring open mics, especially newbies and young poets, because they're our next generation of poets and they keep our community vibrant and alive and flourishing. And so I do love Poe.
Of course.
And sometimes I do write towards the dark side, but my main influences really are the peers in our community.
And you have written a poem a day for well over 21 years now.
Yes.
Was that a conscious plan, or did you just kind of realize one day, I've been doing this for 6 months, I might as well just keep going?
There are some things in our lives we can actually pinpoint. So I can pinpoint that on a Sunday night, it was a snowy Sunday night. I was at a reading in Plainview, and the feature was the first Suffolk County Poet Laureate, George Wallace. And he
Okay.
read. I had heard of him. I had never met him in person. So there I was at the reading. It was a terrific reading. And then they had a Q&A after. And just off the cuff, he said, "Oh, and I write a poem a day." And I can tell you, I felt the needle prick in my arm. And I thought, you know what? I can do that. I can do that. Always up for a challenge. And I did. I remember turning the calendar to February, the shortest month of the year, looking, saying, "Oh my goodness, look at all those boxes." But I used to check off boxes back in the day. I would, check off boxes. And And he said to me not too long ago, he says, "Yeah, you're still doing that poem a day thing. Why?" And I said, "Why not?"
Why not? Yep.
Makes me a better poet. If I wanted to play piano, I'd have to practice every day. So
Sure.
for me, it's practice. And if I like it and I've worked with it and I've polished it and I keep it, it counts. If I'm still working on it, it goes in the slush pile until it becomes something. So everything in my collection are poems I love. And it's at least at the end of the year, I'm a little lazy or busy, distracted about typing them up. So at the end of the year, December 31st is my busiest day of the year because I'm typing them all, getting them all organized, and
Right.
doing my counts, getting it all together. And last year it was 368 poems. During the pandemic, it was 462 one year. I
Wow.
just got really involved.
Nice, nice.
But there's always tomorrow.
I'll be honest, I've never been a real poetry guy, but as a blind person, I do absolutely respect and appreciate anyone who can put beauty to paper. And so I do appreciate that, even in spoken word. So yeah, it does help me when I do hear
We love audience.
it. Right. You touched on it a little bit. Do you have any idea of how many poems you've written over the years?
I cheated. I went ahead and I did count and check.
Okay.
I have with yesterday's poem, because I haven't written today's poem yet, but with
Right.
yesterday's poem, I have 8,094 poems.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
That's a lot of poems.
Yeah, and that's probably one of the reasons why I keep doing it. You know, it's kind of it's habit. You know, it's habit, and I,
Sure.
yeah, who wants to break a streak after, you know,
Sure.
8,094?
Do you post a daily poem anywhere?
No, not generally.
Okay.
Not generally. It becomes, an anticipatory thing. And I have a crazy schedule, crazy daisy life. I'm just always busy with a lot of things. And so if I started doing that, that would put me on some kind of a schedule that I
Right.
probably would not be able to maintain. So I generally don't. I generally don't.
Understandable. Now, you have also published 9 books of poetry, which is impressive. When putting together a collection of poems for a book, do you come up with a concept for the book first, or does the collection of poems dictate the concept?
Good question. Some of both, I think. My first book, which has been sold out a number of years and is as supposed to be on a first book, cringeworthy. Yes,
Right.
it is. I see a lot of things I would have done different. The organizing principle was seasons and people. And
Okay.
so they come and they go, played with the metaphors of the seasons coming and going and people coming and going in your life. So that was predestined to be what it was to be. I have an alphabet collection. A is for almost anything, and B is for betwixt and between. And it's kind of like a box of chocolate because you never know what you're going to get on the
Right.
next page. The poems are the A book are all the poems start with the letter A, and they are sequenced alphabetic, which was so easy.
Right.
As opposed to saying, oh, do I want to put this poem next to this poem? Oh, wait, what about this? Oh, subject. Oh, you know. So it's easy. So that's A and B. I am struggling with a title for the C book, but I will do the whole alphabet.
Okay.
So those kind of determine themselves. Midnight on the Eve of Never is an exception. I was in a darker period of my life, I guess, and the poems that I wrote for specifically for the book and the other poems that I collected for the book tend to be on the darker side. You know, a bit of, you know, grief, sorrow, that kind of darkness. I intentionally put some lighthearted and lightly funny poems in just to uplift it. But it wasn't intentional. It just was, that's where I was in my life. And so.
On that note, do you find it at all difficult to change the tone of the poem from poem to poem or even from book to book?
Sometimes I feel I love to write funny. I do like to write funny because it's very acceptable and it's very embraceable. And I like to think funny. And I, like to think I am funny. And so funny is good.
Sure.
But sometimes when I sway to the darker side, I do, when my editing, I do have a tendency to pull back some of that heaviness as if it's just too much. And so sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes the poem is just going to be that abyss, and that's what it is.
Right.
So
it takes on a mind of its own. It does what it wants to do.
90% of them do that.
Right.
I'm just here for the ride.
Let's talk about more of your books.
Oh, sure.
I never realized that poetry could take on so many different forms. You utilize many of them in your book, Imagistics.
Yes.
Can you tell us about that one?
I love Imagistics. I love Imagistics now. Imagistics was tough. It took me 10 years to put the book together. It kept taking so many different forms, so many different perspectives until I finally said, wait. We need to organize this. It is so over organized. It's two parts, and then each part is in four sections, and each section has three adjectives with an ampersand in between to open it. It's over organized, but I love the book. The first part of the book are emblematic or concrete poems, and they create a picture on the page. And the beauty of those poems is that the picture does not overwhelm the message. The message is always predominant, but the picture is the background. And I love playing, you know, with that. I don't do design work and whatnot. You know, right. It's tabs and single spaces and try and make it fit and stay and work. And the publisher had a tough time. There's a fish in the poem, and the fish's fins just wouldn't stay on the fish. And so it came with its own difficulties. So that's the first part of the book. And then the second part of the book is another love I have, and that's form poems. So it's kind of the informal part one and then the formal part two. And I think for all the work it was to try and get it to work together and function as a book over 10 years was worth it. I do love this book. I do.
A labor of love.
Yeah, it was. It was definitely a labor of love. And I'm delighted that I did books after that one. that wasn't going to be the benchmark. But I love pictures. I love the picture poem part of it. I love learning that emblematic poems are really what you see as these pictures, and that a concrete poem is a picture, but it's something else. It's more picture related than message related. So I learned a lot of things putting the book together. And I love form. My favorite is a sestina, which is 39 lines, and it follows a very, very strict format where you're reusing six words over and over and over and over and over through the poem. And so, I like them. Most poets don't, but I do enjoy them. I've written them even with some of my mentees. And so, they're a wonderful challenge. I enjoy them.
That's fascinating. There's a poem in this collection called Embrace My Heart. Would you mind reading that to us?
Yes, I would love to. And so you can envision how the poem actually functions, and it is in the shape of a heart.
Okay.
Embrace my heart. We hug. I want to be embraced. Soft, firm hands on blades, increasing pressure until breaths held no room for expansion, no sliver of space between us, no contraction, no expelling hearts pounding in breathless embrace. Your heart, leap unlatch my rib cage, embody, exchange, yours, mine, mine, yours, release in mutual parting, release our breaths, our hold, our hearts, release the moment, step back to safe stance, to plead, please, embrace my heart until we hug again.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
And so that one is, that would be emblematic.
That is emblematic. Exactly.
Right. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. But concrete is, I do have a couple of concrete ones, and it's so imagine a tree log. Okay. And it just says tree log, 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 tree log. And somewhere in the middle, you see termite and then tree log, tree log, tree log, tree log. So that's where I learned the integral difference between a concrete poem and an emblematic poem, okay, where the message really rises above the picture in emblematic. And so, cool.
That's very interesting.
Thank you.
So you brought this one up already, but what can you tell us about Midnight on the Eve of Never?
Yeah, that was... It was a tough book. I didn't intentionally go to write something different. And a number of poet friends have said, it's so different from your other books. It's really so much different in a deeper kind of way. And so it was a couple of tough years that led up, and I was just drawn to a number of these poems that kind of coalesced together. And the real metaphor of the book is that it was delivered to my publisher the day of my brother's funeral.
Wow.
And so there were poems in there that expressed grief and sorrow and whatnot that were really written for our dad, that after my brother had passed, then became part of him as well. And so I love the book. I love that the timing was what the timing was, because if I had not finished the book and my brother passed, I probably would have changed the book. And so I'm very satisfied that I left it just like that.
Yeah.
Just the way it was. And so
it's almost as if you were meant to write the book.
Exactly.
In that form.
Exactly. Yes. Destiny. You know, I believe that what it was supposed to be, it was going to be.
Right.
And I'm glad that I wasn't given the opportunity to say, wait, 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 let me change this book.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah. Yeah. I like the book. I like the book a lot.
That's good. There's a poem in this collection called Word. Would you mind reading that one to us?
I would love to read that one. Word. I use you for your liquid locution. As you slip through my lips, your buxom shape filling cheeks with your release, I plump a poetic page with your ripe passion. Word. You're the perfect silhouette, balanced with vowels and consonants, runway line with your designer syntax, crowd-pleasing cure for dull survival in a world dying of epidemic monotony, in a poem crying out for more. I couple you with expectant assonance, neighbor you with electrified metaphorics, unmodified word, you shine. No need for dialectic, diacritic intervention, no jargon, no slang, no lingo. You are the one I want. I choose you from a lexicon of transitives, your vibrant precision, your vivid concision, your voice in my mouth. I taste you, say you again and again, and wonder after all, if you're the one I need.
I love that one.
I do too. I do too. There's so many layers to it, and you know, there's an echo of sadness in there that, yeah, it's like, this is what I want. This is what I want but is this what I need? Is this really what I need?
It epitomizes the writer's struggle.
Yes, yes, yes. And I think of that poem often when I'm having trouble titling a poem. And I think, oh, wait, wait.
I wrote about this. What can you tell us about With a Little Help from My Friends?
With a Little Help from My Friends. So I have been moderating the Farmingdale Creative Writing Group for 29 years. As far as I know, the library actually has been supporting this group with space for, I think, a little over 80 years.
Wow.
Which is remarkable.
Yeah.
Absolutely remarkable. And so I love Farmingdale Library. I love that I live in East Meadow, and yet I can moderate the Farmingdale Creative Writing Group. And they're wonderful. They're wonderful to us. They give us, you know, they give us our space. We meet every other Wednesday in person there. And then the pandemic hit, and whew, we were kind of in a tizzy. What do we do? What do we do? I was not open to Zoom at that time. However, we met every Wednesday on Zoom as the Farmingdale Creative Writing Group to keep some semblance of writing, inspiration, kindred spirits, getting together, spending time together. And so, and we still meet every other Wednesday. But during that, we need to keep going, folks. I started a new tradition, I guess.
Okay.
And every Tuesday, I would send out an email and I would give them the prompt word for the week. And I would collect up their contributions. And the following Tuesday, I would write a poem using all their contributions.
Oh, nice.
And so we've been doing that since March of 2020. I think I finally got my act together and said, oh, wait, we're going to do something with these. So the book, With a Little Help from My Friends, covers the period from May of 2020 through December of 2021. And it's all the poems that we wrote sort of like together.
Sure.
They're my poems, but I took all of their contributions to the themes and put them in a book. I'm working on the next book, which I think is going to be two books.
Okay.
Wednesdays with Writers, I think, will probably be the next one, because we're that book is up to somewhere over 400 pages already.
Wow.
I need to kind of like cut it down. But it was such a fun thing to put out a book of my poetry, but that embraces so many other people. You know, I usually have 26 or 28 people contributing every week with words and phrases and stuff. So it's fun. And so, and today is Tuesday, and later I will write the Tuesday poem on our theme. And so that's With a Little Help from My Friends. Fun book. Definitely.
That's very, it sounds like a very great concept.
Yeah. Yes.
Have any members been with you from the very start?
There are members who were part of the group before me.
Okay.
The group never had a name. I mean, I came into it, and the gentleman who was running it at that point, you know, basically said, you know what, my heart's not in it, and yours is. And that was the beginning. That was the start.
Right.
And shortly thereafter, I said, you know what, for this group being this many years old, why don't you have a name? And they were like, well, we don't know. I said, well, that's it. We are officially naming, and we will be the Farmingdale Creative Writing Group. And so there are still some members that were actually members beforehand that I had met through them. But I get new members usually every month. Somebody new hears about it. And it's like, oh, wow. You know, can I join? And it's like, absolutely, open arms, welcome. Here we are.
Is it still just through Zoom, or are you meeting face to face now again?
Oh no, we meet physically in the library every other Wednesday, except for July and August when we meet every Wednesday. I didn't create the schedule. It's been that way forever and then some. And actually, it does work because the attendance actually goes up in July and August. There's a sense of continuity for people reading stories or novels or you know, putting together poetry collections, and they want to, you know, some feedback. And so there's a continuity with every week, every week, every week. And so it's kind of the reverse of what you would expect for vacation season, but it works. But it works. So we meet every week in person, and then we do the Zoom thing every other week. And so it keeps us writing, it keeps us thinking writing, it keeps us planning, doing, yeah. You know, inspired.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, thank you for doing that.
Thank you. Thank you, Farmingdale Library, for having us. We're delighted.
Now, I have been an aspiring author for 40 years.
Okay.
What advice can you give someone like me to help change that aspiration to accomplishment?
Right. Just right. Mm-hmm. Eventually, I'm just going to put out a book that's called Just Right. Okay. Yeah, you know, a writer is a writer. If you're thinking writing and thinking writing, eventually you're going to run out of room in your brain. Okay. Right. You can't just keep thinking about it and thinking about it. It's any project. The hardest part is, the first step. It's not really that hard. Mm-hmm. Tell yourself, this is what I'm going to do, and do it. But write. Write what you know. Write what's predominant. If you've got a novel in your head and you know how it's going to end, but you're not too sure about the middle, write the end. You know how it starts? Just keep writing. Just keep writing. If you don't write, you have nothing to edit. You have nothing to work with. There's nothing on paper or on screen that you can say, I'm going to make this better. And I'm doing this, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to plow right through and finish this novel, this book, this poetry book, this short story collection, this novella, whatever it is. If you don't start and you don't get stuff down, typed up on paper, handwritten on the back envelope, something, anything, you're never going to move to the next step. So step one is just write. Just write. Just write. Don't worry about punctuation. Don't worry about who you're writing for, what you're writing for. Just write.
Sound and advice.
Yes. Just write. Just write.
Yeah. First of all, my vision loss sent me back a little bit, but then the pandemic also. But mm-hmm. I'm getting the itch again, and I want to get back into it.
Cool. One of my other names is the motivator, so you can feel free to call on me anytime.
Oh, thank you for that.
Yes. I'm a writing coach also. I help people get it together, get it started, get going, get moving, and as well as being an editor. And so I'm kind of like the package deal.
Okay.
Yeah.
We will continue to talk. Now, you also have published 3 books after participating in a 24-hour poetry marathon.
Yes.
Can you explain the concept of a 24-hour poetry marathon?
It is, first of all, it's amazing. I challenge everyone, join us. You can actually go online, you can go on Facebook. It's called The Poetry Marathon. Very simple thing. It varies in date from year to year, depending upon what the moderators are doing. They live in Canada, amazing couple. They organize this huge thing every year, June, July. One year it was September, but it starts at 9 a.m. Eastern time on a Saturday. And then ends, you know, you've got your last poem in and done 9 a.m. on Sunday. And you write a poem an hour, every hour for 24 hours. It's amazing. It's nirvana to me. You know, it's it's quite a rush. You know, 3 a.m. I start to wonder, what am I doing? And I have a group of friends, and we have a group chat, and you know, all through the marathon, we're chatting back and forth. How you doing? What about this? Ooh, what about, you know,
right.
They offer prompts, which I don't generally use, but they offer prompts, visual prompts, and word prompts, and mm-hmm. music, and all sorts of things to help you get through that hour, and then
right.
move to the next hour. If you're a little shy about it, they do also do a 12 hour. So if you want to actually sleep in between, or, you know, if you want to just, you know, just try the 12, they have a 12 hour.
Right.
They create it.
I was going to ask you that. Is there time for a break and a nap?
No.
No, wow.
Well, I guess it depends on how quickly you write. You have an hour. And so an hour seems like a huge amount of time until you get to, you know, like hour 13 and you think, oh.
Right.
Where did those 40 minutes go? No. I don't nap. Some people do, you know, you can catch up. You can't, you know, I mean, it's not a prison sentence. Okay. It's a 24
right.
hour marathon. So you can catch up. You can't write in advance, and it is the honor system. You know, you're not bringing poems in that you already wrote. I love this challenge every year. Have had people join us who would never have considered it before. A few expletives throughout the tough hours, but at the end they say, I'm so glad you convinced me to do this.
Right.
It's a lot of fun. They do create an anthology also after the marathon is over. So it's kind of nice to be able to see, you know, what other people are doing. And you can actually read if they put it up as private, you can not private, that you can actually see what other people are writing throughout throughout the marathon as well. And so I love it. It's a personal challenge to me that I can do this every year. And so
it sounds gratifying when it's all said and done.
It does. Yeah. It does. It does.
You said the moderators are from Canada. Is it set in Canada?
You know, the one year there were 540 people from 75 countries. Okay. So we're starting, I mean, here in New York, we're on the same time zone as Canada. So we're starting at 9 a.m. Some people are starting at 3 a.m. You know, some people are, you know, I mean, you know, their day, whatever, you know, it's 24 hours for them, but it starts at whatever time span, you know, they're working on as well.
I get you.
So, it's to think 500 people are doing this at the same time I am. Wow, that's pretty amazing. And do they have, you know, their little bag of chocolate and their little snacks hidden away? You know, and how much coffee can one drink in 24 hours? A lot. Yes.
Right.
And so I've never once taken a nap after it. I always just go on with my day and do what I need to. And so,
wow.
I love it. I really do. I'm looking forward to this year's already. Yeah.
Good for you. Now, the first of these books is called 24 in 24. Can you tell us about that one?
Correct. It's a lie. There's actually 26 poems. That was actually my first marathon. I was thinking about it the day before, and I write a poem every day. So I wrote a poem in preparation. And so, and then I did the 24 poems through the marathon. And at the end of the marathon, I thought, well, you know what? There's a Zoom thing on, I think at noon. You know what? I think I'm going to go to that Zoom reading because I'm not really tired. And I wrote another poem at the Zoom and read it at the open. And so I included that one too. So I'm a poet, I'm allowed to lie. My 24 in 24 is actually 26. So there's actually 26 poems in the book. I went in with no theme. I went in with no idea what it was going to be. And it opened up this whole amazing world for me. And so,
Are those poems in that collection all different, or is there a theme to it, or
very different, very different. They run the gamut from this, that, to the other thing. There was no, and that's kind of fun. If you go with their prompts, you're going all over the place. I think that this was 2020, so it was during the pandemic. So there are a number of there's a poem in there called Zoom Bomb, so they were timely related in that regard. But I love that book. I love that book as the reminder of the beginning of an experience that I continue to cherish year after year. And so, yeah.
Now, I understand the next book, Dog Speak, has a charitable angle to it. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. So Dog Speak, I actually went in with the idea of I'm going to create a theme, and now maybe I'll be a little more centered and let's see what happens. So my husband and I have rescued 10 dogs in 40 years. And so I said, oh, dogs, you know what? I could do 24 dog poems. Piece of cake. Oh, this will be easy. Okay. So somewhere in there, in my not planning stage, the poems evolved to the dogs telling the poem. So they're in the voice of dogs. So the dogs are actually giving you these poems, these 24 poems. I will say of the 9 books, it is my absolute favorite. I read through some of them and I say, oh, I can't believe I wrote this. I can't believe I wrote this in an hour, and right after this one and right after this one. They are mostly funny. They all have a moralistic lesson to them, and they are all, oh yes, in the voice of dogs. And I thought, I valued it right off. I knew the next day that this was going to be an amazing book. And so all 10 of our dogs were rescued from North Shore Animal League, which I later learned is the world's largest no-kill shelter organization. They're right here on Long Island, they're here in Port Washington. And I thought, well, okay, Long Island, New York, even the region, but they are the world's largest no-kill animal shelter. And I thought, you know what? That's what I'm going to do. So I made the book a fundraiser, and the very first book that went out went to Switzerland, which was pretty amazing. It was international, and in its first days, it was international. And let's see, last March, I was able to give North Shore Animal League a check for $500 from poetry,
That's great.
just from a poetry book. And so, it made a feel good, a really, really good feel good book. And so,
Yeah, good for
I love
you.
dogs. I
Good
love dogs.
job.
And my our youngest gumball, who's 140 pounds, big, big baby. His picture is on the lower left, and Munchkin, our other dog, is on the upper right, his picture. And on the back, Snickers turned 14 the day I turned 60. So there was a picture of the two of us. He made the book, but he didn't make the launch. We lost him in December of that year. And so, but his picture is on the back. And so their voices are inside and their pictures are on the outside. And so, dog speak.
That's great. There is a poem from this collection called Nothing Better. Would you mind reading that one?
I'd love to. This is the most requested poem I have ever written.
I believe
And
it.
so, anyway, so here we go. Nothing better. Bacon, bacon, bacon. We love bacon. Bacon treats, bacon kibble, bacon gravy on bacon, potatoes, bacon in on with everything, bacon. You humans are odd. Bacon raw but never crisp. Bacon crisp but never raw. Bacon strips warmed over, but we don't care. It's bacon. Bacon in the middle of two slices of bacon on a bacon bread sandwich with a drizzle of bacon on top. Homemade bacon cookies? Hint, hint, wink, wink. Bacon. We love bacon better than anything. Bacon chews, bacon bones, bacon toys, bacon strips. Bacon. Nothing better than bacon. 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 Oh, chicken. Chicken wings. Chicken skin sizzling. Chicken treats. Chicken kibble with chicken gravy. Nothing better than chicken. Oh, wait. Beef. Nothing better.
That one is a lot of fun. I completely agree with the narrator.
Yeah, they got a lot to say.
Yes. And I understand why it is the most requested.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, I do a thing at readings at open mic. And actually, sometimes when I'm a feature, I do a thing called poetry roulette. And I'm a spur of the moment kind of person, you know, fly by the seat of my pants. I'm fine. I'm not intimidated by things. And I love a challenge. So I will play poetry roulette. I will ask the host or the feature to pick a number from, with dog speak, say 1 to 24. And whatever number they pick, that's what I'm reading. And so I love to play poetry roulette. And every now and then, people chime in, no, 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 not poetry roulette. We want to hear the bacon poem. Which is pretty special, too, I have to say.
Sure, sure.
Thank you. Thank you. That was fun.
Now, the last of these 24-hour marathon collections is your most recent published work.
Yes.
24 Shades of Purple.
Yes. Yes.
Talk to me about the significance of purple to you and this book.
Well, I am known as the purple poet. I guess purple actually even predates poetry. It's always just been a thing. Purple's just been a thing. I think okay. If you slit my wrist, it would probably come out as purple ink, but it's purple. I wear purple predominantly. I crochet in purple predominantly. I have purple hair. Okay. And so I'm the purple poet. I'll click into a reading anywhere in the world and mics will open and they'll say, oh wow, the purple poet is here. And so yeah, you know what, it's my thing. I think everybody should have a thing or two or three. But purple's my thing. And so the last marathon, I thought, well, I like the idea of having a theme, and I was a little intimidated trying to hold up the bar from dog speak. And I said, you know what? I could do 24 poems on purple. That would be easy. And it kind of was. It kind of was. Even right up until the time, at whatever hour that was, that I dumped my pocketbook on my desk and typed in all of the purple things in my pocketbook, which was basically everything anyway. But yeah, that everything in here is purple. Purple hair, purple nails, purple shadow, purple everything. And so yeah, I like the idea of having a theme when I step in. And so
yeah.
So it's purple.
And I apologize for not wearing purple today.
Oh, that's quite all right. That's quite all right. Some people are like, oh, I wouldn't. I'm like, I don't own it. I love it. If you wear it, I love that too. If you don't wear it, well, that's fine too, you know. All of my book covers are purple. They're all different, okay. But all of my book covers are purple.
If you were to recommend one of your books to a first-time reader of your work, which would it be?
Oh, my. I love them all. I love them all. The surprise aspect would either be the A is for almost anything, or B is for betwixt and between. Everything is in that is are in those books without me sequencing them for you. Imagistics, I spent a lot of time sequencing them for you. Midnight on the Eve of Never is a departure, and it's not, life isn't all dancing daisies, and so sometimes the poignant side can really be quite related. That's divided into two sections also: the bad things that can happen and the really bad things that can happen, but happen anyway. And so, yeah, and then the marathon books, I love them all. I love them all.
All right, I won't force you.
Okay. Yeah. It's hard. My heart is with Dogspeak because it surprised me so much, and because it's helped a lot of dogs and cats and whatnot to survive. Not that $500 goes a miles and miles, but it feels good to help. And so yeah,
Sure.
you pick, you people pick, meet me. I usually have them if you come to a reading where I am. I usually have books with me, and so that's kind of a cool thing too.
Very good. Are you currently working on anything else?
I always have books going. I'm embarking on a book for my brother, as yet untitled. I've got my C book untitled, and I do actually have last year's marathon book. This past year's marathon book that I chose a theme. I collect shoes, and so I have somewhere over the 500 mark of shoes. It's a very
Wow.
organized collection, but I collect shoes, and I thought, oh, I could do 24 poems on shoes, and so it's my new love. I do love that book. The working title is Poetry Shoes, and I think that's probably going to change. But I'm getting close. That'll probably be the next one to come out.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is the fascination with shoes?
I have no idea. I
My wife has like 12 pairs of shoes, and to me that's like 8 pairs too many.
Oh my.
And you're like 500.
Yeah, 500. Yeah. Well, I was in an office. I had to dress for work, so I'd be wearing, 4-inch heels and stuff, and so you have to have them in every color, and so yeah, it's a collection, and I don't have to dust it.
And it's useful.
It's useful, exactly.
Where can people find your work?
Absolutely, definitely in person, only because I say that. And for the locals, come to readings. We have readings everywhere. I often joke and say, we can have you out all, every night of the week, and twice on weekends. And so there are readings everywhere. I host at East Meadow Library. I host at Levittown Town Hall. I host in Eisenhower Park in nice weather, from May to November. So I host a lot of places, and where I am, I generally, have books. I love people coming and reading at an open mic. If I'm hosting, there's an open mic. There's a feature or a literary event, and there's always going to be an open mic. So I say open mic. And otherwise, you can find me on Amazon. You can find me on Barnes and Noble. I think there's a couple of books on Local Gems Press. There's a couple of books on Lulu, but basically Amazon and Barnes and Noble, the main places to find me online, or come find me.
Right. What's your upcoming events? Let's say in
Actually,
April.
April, I have two events in April. I have two amazing features coming to East Meadow Library. I'm also presenting. That's the second Saturday in April. The first Saturday, I'm presenting at the Poetry Festival in Long Beach. I'll be doing a
Nice.
flash mob presentation, a workshop on Saturday, and then Sunday, will be doing a publishing presentation. And then East Meadow Library on the second Saturday, and we have two amazing features. And then the third Saturday, we're at Levittown Town Hall with a book launch that I edited and helped get together. And so, yeah, so it's an April Poetry Month. Busy time, folks.
Yep. Good stuff.
Yes.
So we're nearing the end. Okay. Is there a question that I didn't ask that you thought I would?
No. I figured we would skirt past the purple poet thing, but you know, it managed to niggle its way in, and so that worked. That sounds like a cop out on my half, doesn't it? But
it's the answer I get from most people.
I love everything that we did cover. It was wonderful.
Very good. J.R. Turek, I thank you, but we are not done.
Okay.
I always end by playing a little game. And the game I have chosen for you is called Pick Your Storyline. I will give you a scenario. You choose your path.
You must choose. But choose wisely.
Okay.
Okay. This one might be a little tough for you, but let's do it. Would you rather be able to write endless amounts of revered poems, but never again get the chance to buy a new pair of shoes, or be able to buy endless pairs of shoes, but never again get to write another poem?
Oh, that's like a stiletto to the heart. Oh my. I choose writing. I choose writing every time. I choose writing over everything. Right. And so, yeah, that's my heart. Yeah.
And you have enough pairs of shoes to probably get you through the rest of the time.
Yeah.
Always side with writing, though. I love it.
Yes, always. It always takes precedence. Yes.
Well, I thank you for playing along.
Thank you.
I would like to finish off with a request.
Okay.
Back about 10 years ago, in the 20-teens, I co-founded a writing group with my fellow writers, Phil, Chrissy, Carol, and Mike. And we would meet about once a month and discuss our work. The name of our group was Write On, W-R-I-T-E. And you have a poem from the book Imagistics, which is also called Write On.
Yes, yes, yes.
I would like you to read that poem to close us out.
Super. Thank you. That's my signature, actually. Right on. Yes. I mean, it's my advice to everybody. It ends every email I send anywhere in the world, and it's right on. And so, and this is a limerick. It's a clean limerick, but it's right. A limerick. Okay. Right on. There once was a poet who said, one can live on water and bread, but without a pen, you'd best say amen. A writer not writing is dead.
Truer words may never have been spoken.
Right on.
That is one of my favorites, and I thank you for reading it.
Thank you. Thank you.
And J.R. Turek, I thank you for venturing beyond the rotunda.
This was a wonderful experience. Thank you so much for having me as a guest.
Our pleasure. Take care.
Thank you.
And that was my conversation with Long Island poet J.R. Turek. I hope you enjoyed it. I found her to be a delight. And maybe she enhanced your, or even started your, appreciation for poetry. She certainly did for me. So check out some of her work, or stop into the Farmingdale Public Library and register for the Farmingdale Creative Writing Group. It is something I am looking forward to doing myself. Now, she had mentioned that she wrote her first poem at the age of 5, and that sparked a memory for me as I recited my first poem at the age of 6. It was during my kindergarten graduation, and my classmates and I all dressed up as Disney characters. I went as Doc from The Seven Dwarfs. And my great aunt Natalie created my costume for me. It had a pointy hat and shorts with suspenders that went over my t-shirt. And the hat and the shorts matched. I believe they were yellow and the t-shirt was red. I wore wire-rimmed glasses and a big, full, white, puffy cotton ball beard. And we each would go up to the microphone and recite our poem. And collectively, the poems would tell the story of the school year, right up until the graduation. And I was one of the last kids to go. And so when I stepped up to the microphone, I said the following. We said some rhymes for you right now, just to prove we earned our degree. We studied hard to learn those rhymes, just as you can plainly see. And then I did a little bow and I went back to my spot. And I'm very proud of the fact that 46 years later, I can still remember that poem. And I still have that costume. It's in a Ziploc bag in my closet. If any of my fellow classmates from that time are listening, do you remember that day? Do you remember your costume? Do you remember your poem? Reach out to me. I'd be curious to hear. I want to thank J.R. Turek for sparking that trip down memory lane and for a wonderful conversation. Remember that April is Poetry Month, so go check out all the different events that may be going on in your area. Now, April is also the second meeting of the Twisted Tales True Crime Club that I moderate. It will meet on April 30th at 7 p.m., and registration begins on April 16th. Our last meeting was a full crowd, so hopefully that trend continues. I look forward to speaking with all of you. Our next case will be the Delphi double murder case. I want to thank Brendan and Natalie for all that they do. I thank Max Seal for our theme song, Hideout, from their album Permanent Repeat. And they are currently in the middle of a tour. So if you are anywhere in the vicinity of their site, go check them out. And then come back here for our May interview, where I will be speaking with members from Max Seal. We'll talk about the album, Permanent Repeat, as well as some of their favorite stories from their tours. I thank you all for continuing to listen, following, subscribing, sharing us with your family and friends. I do truly appreciate that. Let's continue to grow this community. And until next month, be well and enjoy wandering the stacks.